Spinning, jumping, and stamping are ordinary activities that most of us took for granted as a child. But they're the movements that propel the work of choreographer Laura Dean. Since the early 1970s, Dean has incorporated these movements in her work, first as a solo performer, and then for her company, the Laura Dean Dancers and Musicians. In 1985, Jennifer Dunning of the New York Times described Dean's dances as a rich, abstruse weave of rhythms and patterns. Looked at from above, the dances unfold in starkly discernible geometric shapes. Seen from the front, they render musical impulse in design that has led some observers to think of Persian rugs. Some of Dean's early dances were set to the music of Steve Reich, but now she composes most of her own scores. Dean's company is performing a retrospective of her work at the Joyce Theater in New York. Dean told Terry Gross that the inspiration for her dances is simple.
Children spin all the time.
I remember I used to.
Oh, I certainly did too.
I love the feeling of getting dizzy.
Yeah, I mean, that's why children do it. It's a natural high. And I see children do it all the time. I happen to live across from a grammar school. And I'm real lucky because I get to see the kids spin in the schoolyard all the time. And the other day, even just on a side street here in New York, there was a little girl spinning. And she would get dizzy. Instead of falling down and laughing, because the cement is hard, she would jump up and down in place. When she got too dizzy, she'd jump up and down in place and start laughing.
How did you start spinning in the context of dance?
Well, I left the context of dance, and I think that that's how it started all over again. I left New York City in 19... I'm a born and bred New Yorker, so I had to leave New York to find myself. And I went to the city of San Francisco, and I wasn't sure whether I was going to be a part of the dance field or live in the country and build a log cabin and grow vegetables. There was just a lot of questioning that was going on at that time. So at that point, I wasn't thinking of myself in relation to the dance field. If anything, I was trying to wipe the slate clean of any past training that I had had. So one of the worst things to do in a dance class, other than walk out, is to sit down. So that's what I did. And then out of that, I got up and I started walking around the room. I got bored with sitting and said, okay, now I've done that. So I just started pacing the room. I didn't think, okay, now I'm going to go back to walking and go back to basics. I was just pacing the room, and then I started walking in circles. And that's how spinning started, very much like a child. And those early dances were things like walking in circles, jumping up and down for an hour. These are things that children do. They're very childlike.
I remember years ago, I saw the Whirling Dervishes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, this will be boring, just watching people twirl around. It'll be great for them, but what am I going to, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be spinning. What am I going to see? And it was absolutely mesmerizing.
It's like watching waves on the beach.
Well, did you think
it's for some people and for other people, watching waves on the beach is a big bore.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Well, was spinning a form of meditation for you, too?
Not at all. Uh-huh. Not at all. It was very much a natural high.
Mm-hmm.
It was because there is a kinesthetic change that happens in your body when you're doing it.
How do you and your dancers prevent being overcome by dizziness?
Rehearsal.
Uh-huh. Is there a technique that you have for the spinning? So
yeah,
that
there is.
That?
I've done a lot of spinning workshops, and people who have had inner ear problems and have had trouble traveling in planes because of inner ear damage or disease have thanked me for the workshops because I do. I start off by teaching turning with using a spot, which is your thumbs, so that your eye has something to grab onto. Because us sighted people keep our balance by constantly using our eyesight. Blind people use their weight and their physicality. But we're always using our eyesight. And what happens is in spinning is that you can't use your eyesight for your balance. That's the physiological change that happens.
So you look at your thumbs?
To start with. And then you take that away, and people see the room going around, and they realize that they're not going to fall over. Of course, you know, for those workshops, people are going very slowly. You know, but we rehearse for months and we're going very, very fast.
When you first had your breakthrough and Richie started spinning and jumping and stamping, who was the first person that you showed this to?
When I came back from San Francisco to New York, I did a concert at a friend's loft to a number of friends. And the first concert that I did was on a 2x3 rug. It was a very small area because I was thinking about space as a time factor. In other words, if you have a smaller space, doesn't necessarily mean that you do something slower in it or faster. It's that whole space-time continuum, time being the rhythmic factor, and space being the choreographic factor.
Have you traveled a lot to other countries, either to observe dancing there or to perform there?
We've been to Indonesia, India, Bulgaria, Yugoslavia, of course, all over Europe. We've not been to South America. I really think the South Americans would like what we do, especially with all the rhythm in it, so maybe someday. We've been to Japan, and it's been real interesting to see the responses from each country is very, very different.
Can you give an example of how the response differs from one culture to another?
Mm-hmm. In India, the big question was, because their art form is mainly a soloist art form, especially with dancers.
Mm-hmm.
Their main question to me was, why do you have, at that time it was six dancers, why do you have six dancers on the stage all wearing the same thing and all doing the same movement? And my response to that was, so you can see the differences. And they understood that. They were fine with that. My big question in Indonesia was, this was before the Indonesians saw what I was doing. Their question from me was, if you don't give your dancers a character and a story to tell, why bother putting them on the stage? And I said, something that only the Indonesians, that I wouldn't necessarily say in the West, but the Indonesians understood, was God gives them a character. And that's what I want to, the audience to see. And they were perfectly happy with that. They understood that. That was okay. In Japan, I had a wonderful thing happen in Japan. We have a big following in Japan, and a lot of their art form has asymmetry in it. And I asked one of our Japanese fans, I said, why is it that you love my work so much? There's so much symmetry in it. And they said, one of the reasons that we create art with asymmetry in it is because we love the symmetry so much. It's to point out the symmetry.
Hmm.
So I've had some wonderful feedback.
Mm-hmm. You had an accident as a child. You mm-hmm. were, when you were 18 months old, hit by a milk truck.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm really surprised that you became such a physical person after having been so injured when you were very, very young.
Well, I think it's just the opposite. I think if someone has, you know, they say that adversity is the best teacher. I had to learn how to rewalk, and that isn't, I don't remember that, but I think that happens with a lot of people in that their limitations can turn out to be their blessing in disguise, you know. You hear these wonderful stories about many dancers who were stricken with polio or were taken to a dance class because of an injury or because they were weak as children. So that adversity, you know, turns out to be a really wonderful thing, I think, for many people.
I guess you healed well. Did the accident leave any permanent damaging effects in your
body? Yeah, it's funny. I mean, thank God I was 18 months old. The bones are still very soft then. The doctor said if I was just a couple of months older, I'd be crippled for the rest of my life. If I had been 2 years and something, the bones would have hardened and I would have been in a lot of trouble. The only thing that I have is very funny. I have a very loud click in one hip. So, of course, I'm not a performer anymore, so I don't have to worry about it too much. But it'd be very funny in class because you could hear it. It was quite audible.
It's its own kind of pattern.
It doesn't
music.
Hurt. You know, it's just something that's there. I'm very lucky. So, yeah.
Does anyone, after they see your dance, think, oh, well, that looks like fun. I think I'll try spinning.
We've had some funny incidences that have happened of people who have gone into the lobby during intermission and said, oh, what they're doing is a piece of cake. It's nothing. And tried spinning and have fallen flat on their faces. There's been a couple of times that that's happened.
So you don't recommend it, huh?
I don't recommend it.
Okay. Well, Laura Dean, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
The Laura Dean dancers and musicians will perform at the Joyce Theater in New York through May 6th. This is Fresh Air.